Hello again, and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, a show that allows you to eavesdrop, like the party lines of yesteryear, on the only reliable form of communication between two best friends on opposite coasts as they attempt to answer questions about life and, like, love and motivational sex camps, all kinds of stuff. But, of course, we never truly commit to any definitive answers on anything, so the show could just as easily be called Two Men and a Little Maybe.
Oh, I love that.
I'm one half of the show, writer for American Dad, interim homeschool principal, and according to the IMDb star meter, the 67,842nd most popular male actor in the United States, Soren Bowie. And I'm joined, as always, by Daniel O'Brien. Please, you speak now, Daniel.
Yes, holy Hannah, congratulations to you, by the way. I am Daniel O'Brien. I am the author of How to Fight Presidents and another book that is also about presidents, the name of which escapes me. I am, as of this recording, a two-time Emmy Award-winning writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, and also, as of this recording, deeply hungry.
Oh.
I forgot to eat this entire day.
You gotta stay hungry. That's what they say. Even after the awards, you gotta stay hungry.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you say, that's what they say. That's what John said. That's what John Oliver, my boss, said. We woke up Monday morning after the Emmys. He called me directly, and he was like, "Stay hungry. No breakfast today."
That is not the English.
Is that how he sounds?
No, that's not John Oliver's accent. That's like I don't know, an action star Englishman.
Okay, yeah. So my boss, Jason Statham, called me Monday morning, and he was like, "Oi, stay hungry." And I was like, "You got it, crank."
Now, ordinarily at this point, we do a COVID update, but we're going to try something new today. This is something a little special for us. We're doing a new thing, a new thing.
Man, you had so much time to plan for this.
So I brought a brand new friend on the show to meet you, Dan. And fingers crossed, I think you two are really going to hit it off.
Okay.
This guest is someone I've been a fan of since reading his first book, Loser Goes First. He's since written two others, Rock On, An Office Power Ballad, and most recently American Spirit, which received a starred review from Publishers Weekly. That's more books than you, Dan, if you're keeping track. You might recognize his work from McSweeney's and GQ. You might also recognize his voice from hosting the Moth Radio Hour. And in the near future, you might recognize his name in the credits of his new NBC show, True Story, with Ed Helms and Randall Park. Daniel, I would like you to meet my new pal, Dan Kennedy.
Hello.
Dan, hello. It's so nice to meet you. I'm, I wish I had arranged my intro differently, because you're much more impressive than I am.
Yes.
And I would have downplayed it if I'd known.
I can do like a wonderfully sort of Canadian and Australian thing. I'm neither Canadian nor Australian, but okay. I can tell you that True Story at NBC isn't my show. I'm just, you know, I'm a story producer at the show, and mm-hmm. And I can tell you that you've probably only heard me hosting the Moth podcast, maybe not the Moth Radio Hour. So that sort of puts it in.
Okay.
It a little less of a tall poppy syndrome kind of thing.
What does being a story producer mean?
Why, by the way, why am I trying to gear this towards Australia? Do you guys have like big reach in Australia?
No,
huge
Iceland.
In Queensland.
You are, right? Okay, good. I had a hunch, apparently. Have I been thinking about Australia? So being a story producer just is really working with storytellers. You know, the show is a storytelling TV show, and it's kind of along the lines of people telling really funny, heartfelt stories, and then there are kind of drunk history-esque recreations that go with it. It was a show in Australia for a couple or a few years, and it's really just a sweet, like a just funny, heartfelt show. I can't say enough good about it. Yeah, working with storytellers on their stories, and working with our hosts, Ed and Randall, and just sort of getting the show in shape with the team, just as a worker among workers, as it were.
Well, I am one of 16 writers for a show, but I still call it my show.
Is it sort of like
giving this to you.
It's like that thing when you're the guy in the band is like, my drummer is a little bit late today.
Yeah. He's like, got ownership over everything in the band.
Yeah, like, you're the bassist. Is he really your drummer?
Right. I mean, I feel like at this point, for like, as a bassist and someone with a chip on my shoulder, I feel like if I see a picture of my boss, John Oliver, with like Paul Rudd somewhere, I'm like, oh, Paul Rudd, a friend of ours.
Now, Dan Kennedy, some things you should know about Daniel O'Brien, the other host of the show. He grew up modeling himself on Rob Gordon, who is the main character from High Fidelity.
Oh, and wow. Okay.
A reason that I was very excited to have you on the podcast is because you are probably the closest he will ever get to meeting Rob Gordon.
Well, you know, I found that quote, what came first from Nick Hornby's novel, High Fidelity. I found that quote, what came first, the sadness or the sad music, to be an emotional true north. Like the day I heard that quote, everything changed for me.
Man, when was that?
I mean, that was ages ago. I want to say it was, I don't know, but when did that book come out? Like in the 90s, right?
It came out in the 90s, yeah. I took it from a library and it was before the movie, and I have no idea what drew me to a book called High Fidelity, because the cover wasn't anything that would like scream out to someone who was into late 90s WWF wrestling or playing clarinet. Like there was nothing about the cover that would draw me to it, but like, I took it and I read it and I was like, this is A, what love is supposed to be like, this is B, how you're supposed to consume pop culture, and this is C, who I'm going to be for the rest of my life, for better or worse.
Can I just surprise you?
Yes.
I heard that from friends in the publishing business that cover tested really high with clarinet players and wrestling fans.
That's their wheelhouse. That's the demographic they are going for.
They were. They were like, you know what? This is right down the middle between the two of them. Yeah. I think we're going to clean up.
Who has disposable income? Got it. People who like Mick Foley and George Gershwin. That's the intersection of this Venn diagram.
Yeah. Like for the longest time, ad agencies focused on the 18 to 34 demographic. Mm-hmm. And then they just went wrestling and clarinets. Let's be honest. Let's drill down.
Now, speaking of ad agencies, you've had a number of jobs, Dan Kennedy, that honestly, at this point, it sort of feels like your chronology doesn't quite make sense because you've had so mm-hmm. many jobs. One of them was working working in ad development for Atlantic, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. But you've also been a firefighter.
Yeah. So,
what?
Okay, here's the thing. Like, I am not the oldest guy on the block, but I'm kind of like one of those 90-year-old dudes now that you meet and you're like, you were what? You know, it's like, I met a guy at Home Depot, you know, I was asking for like some help on a lawnmower blade. I was like, is this a replacement blade for this lawnmower? And he was like, yeah. And I noticed he had like a veteran's pin on his hat. And I go, are you a veteran? He goes, yeah. And I go, well, thanks a lot. You know, he goes, oh yeah. And I go, what'd you do? You know, I was a little bit Max Fisher of me. I was like, you know, where were you? He was like, Nam, you know, Vietnam, two tours. I was landing F-18s on aircraft carriers in the middle of the ocean. You know, jeez. I was just like, dude, like, what, like, how are you, what the, how, what kind of fucking world? I was like Amy Adams in Enchanted. I was just like, what kind of world is it where I ask a dude in a Home Depot for advice on lawnmower parts? And he's like, what's up, chief? I used to land fighters on fucking aircraft carriers. But I'm, my history is such now at this point, because I started working. I mean, I'm really just sort of a blue collar guy that fell in with intellectuals in New York City for 20 something years. And I started working at, I don't know, 9 or 10, you know what I mean? It's like, I always had a hustle. It's like, I was like a 9-year-old little boy, and there was a crisis in the Middle East where an OPEC crisis, and the This was like in the olden days, and the gasoline prices were through the roof. And I lived in Southern California as a little boy, and so the lines for the gas station were like literally like a mile long. They would go over the overpass on the 405, and the gas station was on the next corner, you know, like a mile away. And I scoped that stuff out, and I was like, you know, all those people are probably dying for a cold drink. Like, so I just went to the Stop and Go where I usually hung out and just killed time and drank Cokes and stuff. And I just bought a bunch of Cokes, as many as I could with whatever little money I had in my pocket. And then I went around behind the store and got a box and put them in it. And I rode my BMX bike up to the line. I just started going down the line, like from the very back, you know, like a mile away. I was like, hey, cold drink. Everyone was just like, oh my God, like you read my mind. And I also knew I was a little, you know, 9-year-old boy who could, you know, just sort of like queued it up and get like 4x on the markup, you know. So I was just like, cool, they're $3.75 for the small ones or whatever, $5 for this one. Doritos are $11.50, you know. It wasn't that bad, but it was like, so anyway, I just had stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of ones in my bedroom, and I was like, I am gonna fucking buy this mortgage from my parents and kick them out.
Okay, so I was gonna ask about so I have two major questions right now, and forgive me if this is well-trod ground for you. The first one is, did your parents know what you were doing when you were nine years old and hustling?
I don't think they did. I don't think they knew I was selling drinks and then expanding to sell Doritos and Bubblicious and all this other stuff. And there were duds in the box, like gum was not a big thing in the long lines. But I don't think they did know what I was doing. But like that was the era, you know, like that was the era when parents were just like, you have a BMX bike, like Stranger Things. It was like, go get lost for 9 hours.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The boy comes home covered in mud and like, did you have a good day? Yes, I had a good day. All right. Well, dinner's at 6.
Totally.
That's it. We don't care what happened in between.
Completely. Unless like something suspicious happened in the neighborhood where it was like, bottle rockets started a fire in the vacant lot over by Haster Boulevard.
Well, sort of my other question, and you can choose to not answer this if you don't want to. Did you, in your life, because it sounds like you've had a storied life immediately and were only at age 9, was there a big drug phase or no?
Not really. No. I mean, I sort of dabbled. I think, you know, I did mushrooms a couple times.
Ooh, shout out to Mushroom, one of our sponsors.
Use promo code QQ at mushrooms.com.
Brought to you by psilocybin. You know, that was pretty cool. I mean, I thought they were really revolutionary. And I was living on Bleecker Street at the time in the village. And I was in the habit of a few times eating mushrooms. And then I would sit on the steps on Bleecker and McDougal and just sort of watch people and have what felt like brilliant insights. And you know, it's kind of hacky, but it's the truth. That old thing where you have an insight and then you jot it down in your journal and the next day you read it and you're like, and literally the two things I wrote down that I thought were going to change my life forever were, sometimes people just enjoy arguing about a restaurant and planes are rooms full of people in the sky. And then I read those the next day and I was just like, like it's like so crushingly depressing when you're just like, I seriously thought this was the Rosetta Stone to my life. I thought this was going to be like an album, a novel, and a movie.
Now, I found that the difference between mushrooms and like drinking or smoking weed is that the epiphanies that I had on mushrooms, I felt like stuck with me after the high was over. Afterwards, I was like, yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I was in a park and I was sitting down in what I thought were flowers, and at closer inspection, I realized that it was like the sheddings of a pinata, this paper mache-ish bright colored paper. And I realized it was just trash around me and put my hands in the dirt and felt the wind kind of blow me. And I felt like the earth was trying to shake me off of it. Like I was a parasite on here. And at the time I was like, oh my God. I even drew it later while I was still on mushrooms. And to this day, I still think about it. I'm like, yeah, no, we don't belong here. We're a parasite.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good one. But when you consider the price you pay, it's like you could have also got that from a Greenpeace brochure. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. And then when you really look at the sort of casualty rate of even just fun drugs, like, have you seen those people like I'm 52 and I've seen those people that are my age and they're still doing mushrooms and they really are like kind of dirt wizards, exactly what you just like, they really are still sitting on the ground, like feeling the trash going, look at the beautiful flowers. Yeah. You're like, wow. Like there's something that happens. I can't put my finger on it, but I can always pick someone out who's like still way into that stuff, you know, like mushrooms.
Yeah. They have a sort of a crunchier nature to them.
Yeah. Like a crunchier nature. And they just, you know, they just do random weird things. But there's always, I feel like there's always like a slightly filthy wizard. Yeah,
it's always,
you
know, someone who's like, yeah, what do I do for a living? Well, I guess if you had to say my job, I use a hose and I wash down the elephants at the zoo. But really, like, what I consider my profession to be is a citizen of the universe where we're invaders, right, by the way.
Right. I was at a book party one year and this guy walked up to me. And he had to be in his 50s, and I was younger at the time. I was probably in my 30s, and he walked up to me, and I was like, oh, hey, I recognized him. I was like, how's it going? And he goes, welcome to my island. A little bit later, we're going to fly around it. And I was like, cool, we're in a shitty apartment in Brooklyn. Like, I completely have your number, dude.
So there's no ice cubes here, so you don't have ice? All right. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. I would like to see you just pointing at people and being like, that guy does mushrooms. That guy does mushrooms. And like, oh no, that one's from Santa Fe. I was mistaken.
That would be the best segment on a show. Dreamcatcher or mushrooms?
Yeah. Yeah. A little too obsessed with Native American culture or just a mushroom fan?
Right.
Now you're also, you talked once, because you had him on The Moth, Warren Miller and Warren Miller films. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with those.
Oh, wow. Cool.
I grew up in Colorado.
And oh, wonderful.
Skiing and snowboarding was my life then. And so Warren Miller films were like, that's where you saw it. That was like all the good stuff happened in those.
Oh, man.
And where you ran into the guys, like, I don't know if you've seen any with Glenn Plake in them. Do you remember? Mm-hmm. He's a Daniel Ferhue. He's a skier who in the late 80s and early 90s had a mohawk that was, I want to say, 4 feet high.
All right.
And you, very easy to spot. This is also the era when everybody wore these ski suits. It was just like a one-piece thing.
I'm sorry, there was an era when everyone did that?
Every single person, all the professional skiers. And these films are incredible. And Warren Miller narrates it. And it's just like got this amazing voice of somebody who is just like knows the world better than you. And Dan Kennedy, you had a breakup when you discovered him, right?
I did. I mean, I've never been a skier, and I was living in the village about as far from, you know, skiing as you can get. I was the complete, you know, village cliche, just really skinny, really pale. My hair was dyed black and blue and I wore all black, and I was going through a breakup, and it was one of those breakups where you kind of realize all the furniture was the girls, you know. Like, you're sitting in your apartment and you're like, God, this really highlights what a loser I am. Like, I don't even have like a TV stand. And anyway, I had a little wooden table that I got at the Chelsea flea market. I had a little TV on it and a VCR or something, and I went down to Kim's Video, which was like an institution in the village back in ancient New York, and I was just looking around. I don't know, it was one of those really smart video places where they organize everything by director and everything, and I don't really know directors at the time. I'm just like, how the fuck, you know, I just want new releases and comedies, you know. And then I'm like, Warren Miller, okay, who's Warren Miller? And I'm like, whoa, what is this? I take like three of these things home. I'm like, these look hilarious and weird. And And I think at the time I had just seen Heavy Metal Parking Lot, and I was like, look, more weird documentaries and, and like the films of Les Blank. I was really going down this rabbit hole. So I go watch this Warren Miller dude, and yeah, he had this completely paternal voiceover. I was like watching these films, and he would just say these things. I remember this one passage, I think I mentioned it on stage, where he goes, some of the guys got to the top of the mountain and they realized it was pretty steep, so they took the coward's way down. And then I was like, yeah, you know, like, fuck, you can't be a coward in this life, you know? And then, and then the very next beat was, and of course in my head, I'm like, see, that's what I would do, 'cause I'm a coward. Like, I'm full Paul Giamatti character post breakup. And then the very next beat in Warren Miller's VO was like, I got to the top, looked down, and decided I would take the coward's way as well. And I was like, oh, see, it's okay. It's okay. Like, sometimes you got to make the decision that's right for you. And I just started divining all of these life lessons from these ski voiceovers. I'd never been skiing in my life. And then I met a new girl, and she came over, and there were these brochures on my kitchen table about Austria. And I don't think I'd ever left the country. And she was like, oh, do you have family in Austria? And I was like, no. I'm going skiing in Austria. And she was like, oh, I didn't realize you're a skier. And I was like, I'm not, but that's where I'm learning. And she was like, you're learning in Austria. Like, that's kind of swinging for the fences. And I was like, whatever. I was like, you don't have to go, you know, it's probably just going to be a me thing or whatever. And she just smiled warmly, you know, and she said, maybe we should just go up to Hunter, you know, or a Wyndham or something, and learn in New York. And I was like, yeah, maybe. I kind of want to go bigger though. And I said, have you skied before? And she's like, oh yeah, I started skiing when I was little. I grew up in Sweden. And I was like, cool. She grew up in Scandinavia, knows how to ski, and she just wants to go to the local spot. And I'm like, I've never tried it, but I'm going to Austria. Don't try to stop me, because that's why I don't like relationships.
That's incredible. Is this your...
I'm so excited. This is wonderful.
I feel like we should get into like the actual structure of the show here, Dan.
Can I butt in for 1 second?
Absolutely.
To say that I got all self-involved for as usual, but then we had a show in Montana, a moth show, and Warren Miller was on the show. And after all those years of watching those videos and then learning to ski with the new girl that I had met, who I'm still with 21 years later.
Yes.
I couldn't believe, I was just like, oh my God, Warren Miller is on this show. Like, the Warren Miller. I was like, yeah, we're doing it at the Warren Miller Theater. And then we got to go to his house and hang out. And I bit it so hard at Big Sky that day. I crashed, like, I'm a novice at best, intermediate at best. And I just crashed so hard and knocked the wind out of myself like 5 minutes before I had to do a local interview. And this guy's like, tell us a little bit about storytelling. And I'm like, trying to act all casual.
I've got a collapsed lung.
Yeah, exactly.
It sucks. It's not worth talking about. Good night.
Can we do like a feature where I just give you one word answers? We were at his house that night, and I sat down on the couch next to him, and I said, Mr. Miller, I have a question for you. I was coming down this run at Big Sky today. I was on like a pair of like vocal mantras. It's probably in over my head. It was kind of powder. And like all of a sudden I crossed the tips, and I tried to go left to uncross them, and I couldn't. And I just got air and like flipped over, and it was so scary. And what did I do wrong? And he goes, I can tell you exactly what you did wrong. And I was like, oh, awesome. And he goes, you screwed up. And I was like, did I just get Warren Millard? Like, live?
Yeah, yeah, that's...
Fuck, you're so cool. Like, Soren is the cool one on this podcast, and you're just like knocking him out of the water right now.
Yeah,
you're saying things like, "I got air," and I what was it? I saw twins. What was the thing?
No, he crossed up his tips.
Oh, well, you're probably envisioning that as all style, like super steezy, like, oh, dude, you did a jump and you crossed the tips of your skis. No, it was like I was just trying to like go down an intermediate slope, hit one bump and like got like 6 inches of air. Everything went sideways and I tumbled. Like, you know, it's not as cinematic as you might have thought.
Well, maybe
cut that part out.
Maybe it's your voice then, because it sounds rad as hell when you talk about it.
I'm glad that so when you did that moth at the Wurmler stage, you did mention that you were still with her, and I didn't know if that was still the case. It's good to know, because I was going to ask, and I was like, well, it's probably not appropriate if he's not with her anymore.
Right. How great of a like episode would that be? Yeah. Oh, are you still with her? So what else do you guys want to talk about?
I do want to get into the actual heart of the show, which is where we ask each other quick questions. And Dan, I'd like an answer from both you and Daniel here.
Okay.
So Dan O'Brien, Dan Kennedy, this is going to get tough because it's two Dans.
It'll be fine if you just call me Daniel, as I've asked you to do for 10 years.
Gosh, this is going to be hard. How about Dino Beans?
I'll take that.
A thing about Dan Kennedy as well is that he knows music better than probably anybody. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask you both, there's a way that songs they can knot themselves around these moments in your life where anytime you hear that song after that, you're transported right back to that moment. They become seminal because of whatever was going on in your life when you heard them. And this is not something that's just true of good songs. And so I want to know, what's a song that you hate because it has some power over your own personal history?
Daniel, are you going to take this one?
I have one, yeah, because it makes me very upset because I used to think that I was like intellectual and thoughtful. There's this song, this Eric Clapton song, or I guess it might be Cream. Oh, no, it might be, I think it's Derek and the Dominoes. Layla.
Mm.
You would, okay. Dan, you would know. Is that Derek and the Dominoes or Cream?
It's just Eric Clapton.
I believe you're right. I believe it's Derek and the Dominoes.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I think you're right.
But it was a song that I thought so much about. I think the story behind it is so interesting. That like two parts of the story are very interesting to me. One, Eric Clapton wrote this song because he was in love with George Harrison's wife at the time. And no matter how good Eric Clapton was at guitar and as a musician and as a singer and as like a public figure, he's not a Beatle. So like you can get anyone in the world, but not a Beatles wife. And that's why he wrote this song that was like this heartbreaking, like, this is my friend's wife and I want her and I think I'm supposed to have everything, but I can't. And I don't know how to put these emotions somewhere. And so he wrote the song. And the other thing that I think about with this song is the piano coda at the end that was written by the drummer of the band, whose name was Jim Gordon? I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if that's right, rather. But he wrote this piano coda, and it's a beautiful piece of music, this piano coda. I love it so much. I think about it all the time. And this guy, this drummer, a few years after, this is tragic, a few years after he wrote this piano coda, murdered his own mother.
What?
And then went to jail for it. And is either still in jail or died in jail. It was like, if you want to be romantic about great pieces of art, you would say he was put on this earth to make this one piece of music, and then we don't need him anymore. If you don't want to be romantic about pieces of art...
And apparently, we don't need his mother either.
Right, yes. If you don't want to be romantic, he's a piece of shit and this sucks, and like the song is not good enough to warrant mother death, period.
Those are the two,
the twin things that I had in my head. Like this Eric Clapton narrative, and then this drummer piano coda narrative. And then I watched Goodfellas, and now I can't think of that fucking song without thinking about Goodfellas, because Scorsese used it in that movie to such great effect. It was like the scene that he used to score the defining moment in that movie where Tommy DeVito murders that guy. And so it's like, oh, this used to be a song that like I had lots of fun facts about. And now it's the song that is the Goodfellas song.
But I don't know if it's the format, but I would argue that maybe Goodfellas is a better thing to think about now.
It is, but it feels more universal to associate it with Goodfellas. It used to be a thing that I felt like I could own, and now Goodfellas owns it.
Yeah, that's the worst. That's the worst. When you feel like something got sort of taken from your pocket and now the whole world is enjoying it.
I hear it.
No, I heard it as soon as it came out of my mouth. I was like, oh, okay.
Love of different things is not necessarily a renewable resource. And it feels like as soon as other people have it, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
It's like you could find something. Imagine stumbling on the Grand Canyon as opposed to somebody telling you about it. Mm-hmm. It's like it means so much less that other people know it exists than if it was just yours.
Right. Like I want to like stumble into some saloon somewhere and be like, there's this song that Eric Clapton wrote. And they'll be like, oh, yeah, the Goodfellas song. Nah, never mind. Nah. Who cares? That guy's mom is dead. Never mind.
Dan, do you have one?
I think I might. Well, you know, that same thing happened to me with a song. I think it's Who Are You by The Who. I had these like little specific memories of that song from growing up. And one night after a show, I was in a bar and somebody came up to me and they were like, hey, what's up, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, hey. And then that song came on and the person goes, why are they playing the CSI Miami song or whatever the hell it was, or like Law and Order SVU, I don't know, some procedural apparently used it as opening credits. And I was like, this song? And they were like, oh, wait, this was like a song before it was a thing, right? And I was like, well, but whatever. You know, like you also don't want to be that person,
right,
who's like, yeah, man, you can't associate. Because at the same time, you're like, hey, you know what? It's the TV show song, too.
Yeah.
You know? Right.
There's songs that I love that now belong to Ford or like GM.
Yeah. I mean, it is a weird thing, but I have a perverse sort of pleasure from getting used to things not being mine anymore. Like as you move through the world, I try to be really kind of graceful. I sound like Dreamcatcher, not mushrooms. But, you know, just that thing where you're like, well, it's not mine anymore. You know, it's like it's for someone else now. Like I feel that way, like with New York City is a place you can really feel like that about, right? Like,
yeah,
like it's your city for a certain amount of time and then you start seeing it be other people's city and you're like, all right, okay. You know, you have two sort of choices you can make at that time. Either just dig your heels in and be like, God damn, I can remember. Or you can be like, well, you know, cool, man.
Now, are those things that happen simultaneously? Was it like in 2004 you were like, New York is not for me and also songs are not for me anymore? Or is it are those independent things that you land on?
Independent and very small clicks on a dial. You know, it's nothing overwhelming or disarming, and there's always five wonderful things to replace it if you're still moving forward and living. You know, if you're not moving forward and you're just kind of like calcifying from age, you know, say 30 north, then I think that's when shit goes sideways and you're like, hey man, you know, this was my scene or that was our thing, or, you know. But I think if you're still discovering stuff and still alive, you're like, oh, all right, cool, well now I'm kind of moving into this thing or doing that, you know.
Holy shit, you're so much better at answering questions than either of us are.
Yeah, you come on the show every single day.
This sucks. You're so good.
This sucks. You're so good.
Soren, do you have one? Like, it matters?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to decide if I should even say it. There's a Coldplay song called Scientist.
Come up to meet you, tell you I'm sorry, you don't know.
And I've never been a huge Coldplay fan. Are you guys aware of this song?
No, I only know Yellow or whatever the big hit was.
I think every Coldplay song sort of blends together for me, except Viva La Vida.
Okay, the majority of this one is just like some clanging on the piano, and then like no one said it was easy, like that kind of theme, right? And okay. Coldplay is not a band that I've ever really been into.
Is it Lights Will Guide You?
No,
different one.
That's right. I'll Fix You. That's the. God, how do I know so much Coldplay fact? And you wrote that one for Gwyneth Paltrow when her father died, and he was trying to fix her, and he didn't know how. Okay, so so anyway, I fucking hate Coldplay, right? And
right on, dude.
Back in 2004, I was having a long distance relationship, and I wasn't able to see this girl for 6 months, and I was working in retail over the summer, and. At the end of the day, I would have to go through and like fold all the clothes and get everything ready for the next day. But no one was in the store. I had like an hour to close up.
And hold on. I need to pause because as soon as you said I was working in retail, yeah. Dan knowingly gasped like, like he knew where this was going. Dan, on that.
You know where I thought it was going? I thought you were going to be like, so I was going through, you know, this long distance relationship situation. And I was working in retail, and our music loop, you know, would play that 6 times a day.
Yes. So you're not wrong. Yes.
Oh, right on.
So there's a limited number of songs that you can listen to because there's the one track that you get that's like, it's maybe like 30 songs all in a row, and you just listen to that every single day. And it's like these pre-picked songs that aren't going to dissuade anyone from shopping in your store. And one of them is this song. And this is the only kind of melancholy song that there is. And it was the only one that was even close to capturing this like yearning I was feeling at the time. And so I knew that on the tracks list, I could go skip to that song if I needed to. And I would, at the end of the night, I would turn that one to that song way up. And in the women's section, there was a mannequin that was just like a torso that was... that I'd have to dress every night because you got to change the outfits out. And it was like, I'd walk up to this thing and like very gentlemanly remove the sports bra and put on a new one. And
right. I mean, you introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Soren. It's very nice to meet you. Beautiful night, isn't it? The moon is out. Every single time, like I would, it's almost like I would blush just like grazing the rubber skin of this dummy because I hadn't been with my girlfriend in 6 months. And here was this body that was very similar in shape to hers and everything. And I just would think about her and listen to this song that was like the closest I could get at work to feeling. And that song, every time it comes on now, I go right back to there. And like that feeling of wanting somebody so badly. And that, I will say, Dan Kennedy, this also ended up being my wife eventually. And
the mannequin. Wow.
The mannequin. That's
yes.
So...
Means
that, yes.
This mannequin he was really polite to.
Very untraditional.
Yeah.
But we don't frown upon it.
No. Yeah.
No.
And it was a time in my life when like I was falling in love with my wife. And so it's very, it's important to me. But it's also... this song I just don't like objectively and know is a bad song.
Does she know? So she famously does not listen to this podcast. Does she know this fact about you? When this song comes on, does she give you a look? Oh, she doesn't know?
I've told her about the mannequin stuff. Okay. And I think that it weirded her out a little. And so we don't really talk about it.
I don't know. I think that's such a beautifully suburban scene. Like there's something that the suburbs, and I don't even know that you were in the suburbs. You could have been in downtown of a city or something, but I just feel like it captures this safe ennui that I always loved. Like David Lynch speaks of arriving in Los Angeles and going to the Bob's Big Boy and ordering a milkshake. And he had the safety of Bob's Big Boy and the milkshake to come back to so he could explore his darkest, weirdest ideas in his notebook. And I just always felt that way about the type of music you're talking about, you know, whether it's Coldplay or like any of these like safe kind of middle of the road, very emotive songs always felt like a safe way to feel kind of melancholy to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's how they become pop music, I think, right? It's like,
yeah, I mean, it must be, right?
There's so many, you can attach anything that's going on in your life to these things, and because that you can do that, everybody does it, and it's like, yes, this song means something to me.
I think you're completely right, and I find that with rock songs, like I have one song, any song that's rock or that's pop will knot itself around me, like you're talking about, to a specific time of my life and kind of haunt me. It'll always be tied to it, but I don't find that with classical or with like jazz, like any other kind of music.
That's true.
Does not really, I don't know if it's like the 4/4 time signature or if it's that pop music is so popular that you hear it in so many places, like retail places, and so therefore it's more branded onto you or what, but I don't find that with other kinds of music. There's a Foo Fighters song like that is so middle of the road, like just a dad rock sort of song, perfectly solid, love of those guys, great guys, all that stuff, but it's so, I heard it, I was on the road for like 10 cities, and when we got to Minneapolis, Foo Fighters were playing the night after we were there on this shoot for this TV show, and my buddy was like, dude, I got us tickets, we're all going. And I was like, no way. So we went, and they played this song that I had only heard that night. And it was about like Run for Your Life. You know, it was off like the new album. It was like Wake Up, Run for Your Life with Me. And that was 2018 in October, and my parents' house had burned down.
Whoa.
Holy fucking, I think, shit.
Like, yeah, like 2 weeks prior or something like that in the wildfires.
Wait. Okay, go on. I put a pin in that, but go on.
And so it was like this thing. I'm not the most emotional guy. Like, I save it, I use it in a novel or in a script or in a joke or whatever. But I'm a pretty sensible, just normal suburban dude. You wouldn't know it from the shit that I write, but but I am. And but that was just one of those moments where I'm like, we're standing there watching the band, and it's like, holy shit, he's describing every, like the whole video for this song right now in my head is like my parents' phone ringing 2 weeks ago, my mom waking my dad up, and them getting out of Paradise, California, by the skin of their teeth, you know, in the nick of time. Like, and it was just like, fuck, okay, focus on anything. Focus on Taylor. Wow, is he playing like 16ths on the hi-hat? What a trip. Like, how's he doing that? Oh, is he using two sticks? No, it's one stick. Wow, he's got a lot. Is that? And like, it's just like overtaking me like a wave. But yeah. I just, you know, that's, I just got, I just,
that's,
I was
amazing.
Just like, fucking whatever. You got pizza up there?
That's phenomenal. That's insane.
But, and I still can't listen to it. I can listen to that whole album and remember that shoot, those like 5 weeks we were out doing stuff, and it's fun. And I remember the whole show and get to that song and just like skip it.
Too much.
And if I'm in a store, like if I'm in a store and that comes on, or somewhere that's playing, like, you know, I'm just like, all right, I can't, you know, it's like, you would think it would be like, I don't know, any number of, I mean, God knows there are bands that have, you know, I've got some depressing music in my memory from like my 20s, bands that were on 4AD from England.
And, yeah.
You know, bands that made Nick Hornby's line a godsend of what came first, the sadness or the sad music. You know, so you would think it'd be any number of those, but those, I just hear them now. Like, now that I'm a little bit older, it's like I listen to like the saddest Throwing Muses song or American Music Club song, and I'm just like, that's sweet. Yeah. You know, I'm just like this dad who thinks it's funny that, you know.
Yeah, that you exist outside of that sort of history.
Yeah. Like, you have the luxury now of going, oh, well, you know, the world didn't devour me, so.
Right.
You know, this seems kind of silly and like a kind of caricature of sadness now.
Now, your parents' house burning down in a forest fire. Mm-hmm. Is that partially what led you to being a forest fire fighter? Forest firefighter.
No, so I fought fires.
I don't think, I want to like to answer Soren's question. I don't think you can choose, like, as a fireman, I'm only going to fight forest fires. I think it's like an all or nothing scenario.
Not true.
No, not true at all.
Really?
Not true. Yeah. No, it's just the opposite. Yeah, like you. So I fought forest fires when I was, what, 24 years old or something. And mostly because I was, you know, I was in this college town, not going to college, mm-hmm. and didn't have a lot of options. I was like, I mean, what we know from the last 3 years now, it's like, well, you had a big privilege, didn't you, dude? And I get that, you know, but at the time I was just a towel boy at a health, you know, like a gym. And I just would fold towels and hand them to you when you came in to work out. And I'd take your card and be like, okay, make sure everything checked out, like some fucking, you know, detective. And do a double take.
Gym detective. Cue the Who.
Cue They Might Be Giants. And so then I was like, how am I going to make some fucking money? I work at a record store and a bookstore. And then I got the third job at the gym. Oh, that's because I got canned at the bookstore. I used to drink a little bit. I don't do that anymore. But anyways, so there was a girl there and she said the most kick-ass thing I've ever heard anybody say to me when I asked like what they do besides their job. You know how you ask each other that when you're on a job, because obviously if you're working at a bookstore, do you want to be a writer or
yeah.
you know, whatever. And I was like, so what's your thing, you know, outside of working at the gym or whatever? She's like, oh, I'm a smoke jumper. And I was like,
oh,
what is a smoke jumper? She's like, I jump out of airplanes with a parachute holding an axe into forest fires and I battle them. And I was just like, you are a fucking rock god. Like, who are you? Like, who does that? And
my thing is I drink too much to work at this bookstore.
Seriously. It was like, oh, my thing is I watch depressing bands at a burrito place and get loaded. And she was like, you should try it. And I did that thing where you hear yourself going, yeah, I totally should. Like, you know, just because you're trying to be cool and impress somebody. And then, yeah, and then, you know, a whole bunch of physical tests and endurance stuff and fire science stuff. You know, then it's like 3 a.m. and you're walking into a forest on fire and you're like, holy shit, this went way too far. Like, I was just trying to impress Allison.
I don't even know her anymore. This sucks.
Yeah. It was like, and I had this like really weird, narrow idea. Like, I'm going to see her on every fire. You know, we'll probably fall in love, you know? She's like, dude, you're on a fucking hand crew. I am flying out of the sky. Okay. You're rolling up hoses 4 days after I've been there, dude.
So like, do we get walkie talkies? How's it going to work between us?
Exactly. It seems like communication's going to be a challenge. Oh, who's John? Who's John?
Oh,
you keep mentioning
okay.
John. Who's John? Oh, he's a smoke jumper too. Interesting. I think all the action's on the ground. So I did that in my 20s and my, you know, these fires didn't burn our house down and the town down until 2 years ago.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. So that was that.
Wow.
That was, you know,
Dan, you have lived an extraordinary life.
Yeah.
Well, that was my folks and my sister. I was a guy 3,000 miles away, sort of going, oh my God, what song do I need to listen to not lose my mind?
Well, we've absolutely loved having you on this podcast. We're at the point now where I sort of do like a plug for all of us, and you can plug anything that you want, but I got to go find the stuff for Dan and me. While I do that, I just want to give you a chance, Dan Kennedy. It's fall right now, and I want to know, what are the terrestrial or aquatic insects that like trout would be like nibbling for? Like, what do trout want right now?
That's a very good question. You should answer it
right
quickly.
Now, it's still kind of about terrestrials in most of the country. Like, it's still warm enough that you see a lot of grasshoppers and a lot of ants and a lot of beetles. So it's still terrestrials, although Isonychia are starting to hatch in the eastern United States. And so on the rivers, you know, this side of Colorado where you grew up, definitely Isonychia right now. And then... as October comes, start throwing the big junk like streamers because the Browns are going to be spawning.
Oh, yeah.
He knows everything, Dan. all right. Now, I'd like to give you a chance first, Dan Kennedy, to plug the things that you're working on or that you would want people to find you.
I don't know. You know, come around Twitter. Right now, I'm not really plugging anything. I'm loving this stint working with the folks at True Story. And then, like every other TV writer and producer, I'll be looking for another gig. I'm working on a book called Hail Satin, which is a heavy metal soap opera set in the 80s.
Yes.
And, you know, not that anyone asked me to, just figure like it's probably something fun to type.
Had I known I could ask that, I would have asked you to do it.
Yeah. And is there anything, so is there like anything resembling an audiobook in your future? Anything like I have to be transparent about this. I can't be cool. You have an incredible voice. It's wildly sexy. Is there anywhere that our fans can go to just like listen to you talk about things for a while?
Oh, you know what? There's a new thing I just started recording here at my studio at McSweeney's, and it's called Dan Kennedy Solves Your Problems with Storytelling, where I fix your entire life or just problems you have with stories.
That sounds incredible and a better version of this show. I encourage everyone to subscribe and donate to it if that's a thing that they're allowed to do.
You can.
I want to say, by the way, like massive props for the shout out to the Scholastic Book Fair a couple episodes.
Oh, yes.
That was like, oh, I have to say yes to this. It's like, that was awesome. Maria designs books for Scholastic.
Oh, no.
That's like, yeah, like I sit here recording stuff, she sits there designing stuff.
That's great. Well, if you want to follow Dan Kennedy on Twitter, you can follow him at DanKennedy_NYC. You can follow Dan at DOB_Inc. That's Daniel O'Brien. But he has to approve you, and that's likely not going to happen for whatever reason.
Just follow Dan Kennedy. Just follow him. He's better.
You can follow me, Soren, at Soren_LTD. You can follow our show, QQ_Soren and Dan. And if you want to email us, go to QQ with Soren and Daniel@gmail.com. Or also, I should mention Gabe Harder, of course. You can follow or find or hire our producer and sound engineer, Gabe Harder, at his website, GabeHarder.com, which will be up and running, honestly, I think by like 2026. I think it's going to be up.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Dan Kennedy, for being on the show. It was a pleasure to have you, and you have some wonderful stories, and it was such a treat.
This was amazing.
Oh, thanks, guys. This was super fun.
Favorite really episode of the show, easily.
Okay, bye.